Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Ben.
I'm Noel.
And we are joined with our super producer, Casey Pegram, today. And this is Ridiculous History.
And I will tell you, he is piping a legit mixtape into my headphones right now. I really wish you guys could hear it, but we couldn't clear the samples. So
it's always the samples that get us.
Just for us.
You'll have to take our word for it. Like most people, we're very into music.
It's true. And I wanted to ask you, Ben, have you seen the movie The Bone Collector?
The Bone Collector? I feel like I have. Wait, is this the is this like the crime film?
Yeah.
Where is someone paralyzed?
You know, I haven't actually seen it. It's just the name makes me think of the topic that we're talking about today. That was a total non sequitur, but that's the we love non sequiturs here on Ridiculous History. But yeah, I love music. You love music. Casey loves music. I'm telling you, these samples are on fire. I really wish you guys could hear it, but it's just for us.
Right. And it brings up a pretty good question. We'll segue just a little bit here, which is, how far would you go to hear that one song that you really wanted to hear? You know, the thing that's stuck in your head, or the, let's say your favorite artist puts out a new album and you're like, I got to get it. I got to get it. But yeah, I can't find it.
Or Casey's fire mixtape.
Or Casey's fire mixtape, which is the reason we keep a fire extinguisher in the studio now. We learned our lesson.
Well, let's go back far, 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 far away.
All right.
To the distant past. Not that distant, I guess. Picture yourself, Ben.
Okay.
As a child in Russia.
Okay.
Okay. And like you said, you've got this tune, some sort of little ditty, a jingle, if you will, that you just can't get out of your head. You gotta own it. You gotta get a copy on a gramophone record. And in Soviet Russia, there were record stores, but a lot of the music that was very popular was forbidden.
Oh, because you see, ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors, that music was Western. And at the time, in the years after World War II, the USSR and the United States, or the West in general, were in a, not a hot war, but a very cold one, a war of ideology, a war of hegemony, an attempt to control the hearts and minds of the human species. And the USSR was pretty militant about things that it felt were decadent or Western or violated communist sensibilities, especially music and art, which they considered propaganda. This means for little Russian Ben, it's going to be really tough to get a record that he wants.
Desperately.
Yeah.
Desperately wants. And as far back as 1932, the Stalin regime decided that all arts would be subject to censorship, and there would be a test applied that would determine whether this piece of art, be it music, be it sculpture, painting, what have you, was, quote, in service to socialist realism. And this idea of socialist realism, it's sort of characterized by the glorified depiction of communist values, such as the emancipation of the proletariat, by means of realistic imagery. So jazz was prohibited in the Soviet Union until briefly during World War II, when Russia and America were aligned behind the same cause. But then get to that chilly war that you're talking about. During that, the tables turned once again, and roughly from 1947 to the early 90s, Russian jazz musicians were actually arrested and locked up in gulags, and recordings from American and even British artists were particularly forbidden. They were deemed a fascist, or the term mystic came up, which seems like an odd term of abuse. I mean, I think the word mystic sounds like something that would be, you know, cool.
And speaking of cool language surrounding this, here's a glimpse into how seriously people in general, let's call them the musical squares of the USSR. Here's how seriously they took it. There was a common catchphrase that translates to something like, "Today he dances jazz, but tomorrow he will sell his homeland."
Oh my goodness, that is heavy.
I know, right?
Oh, let's unpack that. So is that literally like saying, you listen to jazz, you're potentially a traitor?
Right. You listen to jazz, therefore, whether you are like a degree removed from a spy.
Do you think the implication is that this kind of music would cause people to betray the state by infecting them with some sort of like, you know, agenda that was somehow present in jazz music?
Absolutely. I think that is absolutely the case because we've seen the same thing happen cyclically, or I should say similar things cyclically with music in the past. You know what I mean? Like the music that people our age like might horrify our elders, and the music they enjoyed might have horrified their elders. So there's a weird changing of the guard that occurs.
I know. I'm in an interesting spot with my 8-year-old daughter because the music that she loves doesn't really horrify me as much as it borifies me. But, you know, maybe, you know, given a little more time, maybe she'll, maybe they'll be like the new Marilyn Manson and she'll get into that. And then all of a sudden I'll be like, you know, super shocked. But I swear to you, the most of the stuff she listens to, I'm just shocked at how freaking dull it is.
And that is an interesting problem. I have this picture of you, Noel, telling your 8-year-old daughter that she should listen to more challenging music.
I literally do say things along those lines. There's this one song that she really loved that is literally heart and soul, like from Big.
Remember,
and I pointed that out to her because she says the song was so great. I'm like, kid, this is like a total straight one-to-one ripoff of this like piano song that every kid learns how to play. But I digress.
Oh, well, not we
maybe
haven't
not. Can we repackage my digression into to
absolutely
gold?
Right. Absolutely, right. Because let's say that wasn't just a ripoff. Let's say it was so close that it was almost a bootleg of that song.
A facsimile, if you will.
There we go. Okay. We just did. And we hope we pull it off. Let us know. Write to us at ridiculous@howstuffworks.com.
Can I say one more thing before we pop into this the bootleg stuff? There was actually even an element of this censorship that allowed for Russian-born artists to be blacklisted as traitors, like you just said, or dissidents under the Soviet regime. And it was really easy for that to happen because it pretty much just took getting on the wrong side of the government. And this is actually even still happening to this day. Artist Robbie Williams, who you may remember from, I think, was it Take That? He was in like a boy band and then he had that song Millennium. He reportedly, according to an article in Digital Spy that I found, was banned from performing in Russia after he released a song called Party Like a Russian that apparently made some little jabs at Putin. So
yeah,
they still take that stuff pretty seriously.
And the band Pussy Riot also got imprisoned for a countercultural or countergovernment protest. Yes.
So they definitely are not playing around, even to this day, in the former Soviet Union.
So here we are in the 50s and the younger kids, right, with their version of, let's call them hipsters to set this up, they want this music, but this music is banned. And without going too far into other stories, I think we can all say that prohibition doesn't work as well as its supporters wish it would.
Definitely not. I like to think of these Russian youths as beatniks.
Yeah.
Did I do a good job?
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Doesn't it seem like the word beatnik would have to come to have some sort of Russian origin anyway?
Because it ends in Nick.
The Nick, what is it, Boris and Natasha, the no good Nicks?
Robotnik. It seems Eastern European or even Slavic there. Here's the thing. When you ban something, especially amongst younger kids, right, especially if they're teenagers and they see banned things as cool, then the first thing that happens is a demand, if it didn't exist, comes into being. And this is where these kids begin to unite. And they called themselves the Stilyagi, which I know sounds like a super cool, specific type of subgenre of vampire.
It really does.
But this is still pretty cool.
Whoa, wait a minute. What were the names of the vampires in that kind of middling vampire show on FX that Guillermo del Toro did? They were called
The Strain.
No, it was called The Strain, but they were called the
Strigoi.
Strigoi. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But
okay.
It was very close.
It was good. Yeah. It was very close. But yeah, I mean, the heart wants what the heart wants, right? So like these hip kids, they wanted their damn records, and the Stilyagi, as you said, kind of banded together. That means style hunters, by the way. Which I think is interesting. And this youth movement was so obsessed with like modern trends and culture and a lot of the stuff that was brought back by returning soldiers who'd been able to experience modern culture abroad. And this communist crackdown created this thriving black market. But how, you know, when that stuff is scarce, what happens? Prices go up.
Yeah, through the roof.
And these are kids. They can't afford to pay those kind of prices for their record discs, you know? Mm-hmm.
And as a result, they were trying to find any other way to access these records, because not only would the price be super high, but availability would be very low, right? So even if you did have the exorbitant amount of cash needed to get the latest Elvis Presley record, which was, you know, a hot commodity at that time, the black market might just be sold out.
Totally. It's sold out, or like as the supply diminishes, those prices are just going to go up, up, up. But luckily, in 1946, there was an invention called the Telefunken recording lathe, and it kind of blew this whole problem wide open. The recording lathe actually allowed an audio signal to be fed in to this machine, and then a lathe, which is like a, like almost like a cutting tool kind of, that it actually cuts grooves into a plastic material that you can then play back on a standard record player, right? Mm-hmm. And so this guy named Stanislav Filo opened a little shop where he charged a nominal fee to allow customers to make little voice recordings onto plastic discs, kind of as a bit of curio, tourist trap kind of deal. But the real success from this came from a different use of the lathe. Mm-hmm. He used it to make copies of this forbidden music. So it's like pre BitTorrent, Napster pirating. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there's another material problem that comes in here. So now we finally have the technology to reproduce these recordings, but we're missing something very important, and that is vinyl. There's still no vinyl around.
Well, because the material that he had access to probably had to be special ordered, expensive, and not readily available as well. Wasn't something that you could just get at a department store. So the Stilyagi got creative.
Yes, the style hunters began, get this, digging through dumpsters. Not just any dumpsters. Hospital dumpsters. And they weren't just looking for, you know, medical waste or weird shoes or something.
So we have proto-Russian hipsters pirating music and dumpster diving.
Right.
All in the same story.
History doesn't repeat, but it sure does rhyme.
Man.
And they were looking for scrapped X-rays, because X-rays were made using thin vinyl sheets.
So like X-rays, like literally, like I go in with a broken collarbone, they run an X-ray of me, they have to throw it out because of laws actually that were meant to protect against fire hazards, because this material, you just end up with stacks and stacks of like dusty X-rays. Stuff can go up in a blaze, you know, so they had to regularly put them out to the trash. And the Stilyagi got wise to it and basically had a supply chain for these bootleg copies of recordings. So it was actually a pair of customers of Filo, the guy we talked about that made the voice recordings, a guy by the name of Boris Tygin and Rusian Bagoslavsky. They somehow managed to like cobble together their own version of this lathe cutter through like rando spare parts and God knows what. But I guess they, you know, were able to like look at the design of it and figure out a way to make their own, which I think is incredibly entrepreneurial and interesting. Mm-hmm. And this has spawned this entire cottage industry.
Yeah, I like that phrase, cottage industry there. They would duplicate recordings onto the X-ray itself, the X-ray sheet, and then they would have to trim the disc by hand. And for me, this is one of the neatest parts. They would burn a hole in the center so you could put the record on a record player with a cigarette. You can see this process online if you would like, in, well, numerous fan recordings right on YouTube, but it's also in the opening credits of a 2008 cult film called Stilyagi.
And this whole cottage industry, I guess, for lack of a better term, had a name. It was called like the X-ray press, or hopefully I can do this right, Röntgenestat.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, not bad, right? And, you know, you can actually find these things today, but they're pretty rare and, you know, kind of counter to what their intent was, quite expensive. so I was actually only able to find a couple of listings on eBay and like disc, I think I found one on Discogs maybe, but, they're, you know, upwards of $300, which is actually lower than I would have thought. So, you know, if you want to get a piece and become a bone collector yourself, you can take a look. They're out there to be found, and they sound really neat.
They sound really neat. Now, technically the audio quality is going to be poor. We just want to establish that, but you're also encountering a piece of forbidden history.
Well, shall we hear a couple of clips of this poor quality forbidden history?
That's a great idea. Casey, if you would.
By a birdland, that's what I always hear when you sigh. Never in my word land could there be ways to reveal.
Oh, my soul is crowded, do you still find some room? For broken hearted lovers, it's too crowded and gloomy.
All right, so there it is. Noel, how would you describe that sound when you first heard it?
Well, it's super evocative for me. I mean, I'm a vinyl fan in general, but when I hear like old jazz or that kind of like tinny recording quality, then you hear it mixed with all those pops and clicks and the hiss of like everything. And like I said, because you're making this on a material it wasn't really intended for, it's also going to sound like extra raw. Mm-hmm. It kind of gives me goosebumps a little bit. It's a little bit ethereal and kind of spooky.
Agreed. It's sort of the auditory version of the feeling I get when I see old film, which has still all the contaminants and all the junk on the cells. There's a laundry list of reasons why these recordings were imperfect. First, the quality degraded with each play of the bootleg, because the lathes could only etch shallow grooves into these sheets. And this meant that they were impermanent. People would call it jazz on the bones. This is so full of cool phrases.
Yeah.
Because they were impermanent, because each play would degrade the quality, the demand for their production skyrocketed even higher. So I gotta say, I'm pretty sure somebody at the hospital eventually noticed. I mean, they may have found out about the x-rays because of a hookup inside the hospital. So at this point, Philo does not have a monopoly anymore by any means, you know, because all you have to do is have an existing bootleg recording from somewhere else on actual vinyl.
Sure.
And then go to the nearest hospital dumpster, not get caught, and hang out with your friends who can teach you how to do this. So there's almost like a hidden culture here operating under the eye of the USSR.
Well, it's interesting too, because I think of like Russian culture and youth culture today. There's a whole scene of super young Russian kids that make these insane YouTube videos where they go up onto like really, really, really high skyscrapers like at night and break into empty buildings and like hang off the edge and stuff. So like, I feel like in a way that's kind of a continuation of that like badass kind of punk spirit of like, we're going to do what we're going to do. And, you know, we love what we love and government be damned. But it's like living in a regime like that almost forces you to have to kind of like be a bit of a badass, right?
Yeah, a bit of a daredevil. You have to succeed with some daring do. And I really love that you mentioned the modern meme of climbing and taking those incredible selfies, because one of the things the photographers do is they don't just try to get to the place. They try to recreate a specific like trope or scene, you know, somebody hanging out of a window, somebody wearing the same outfit, doing the same selfie at the top of the same crane.
Right.
So it is, I think the best word to describe it would be badass. These, in contrast to the prohibitively expensive actual on vinyl used to make records, bootleg records, the bone records, these bootlegs on x-rays would cost between 4 to 6 rubles. That was about the price of a typical lunch. And not every record came from those two guys who started what they called the Golden Dog Gang. Many people were accidentally buying records that only had a few seconds of music. How infuriating is that? How angry would you be if you're thinking, oh, yes, my new Elvis record, and then you hear the opening riff, and that's it.
It's a bait and switch right there, man. I'd be enraged.
Enraged, yeah, that's a good word for it. These also led to the development of a dance tradition, different dances. There was one called the Hamburg style,
yeah,
the atomic style.
Can you do a little Hamburg style for me right now, Ben? I'll describe it to the people.
I cannot. I would feel like I am culturally appropriating their struggle.
Okay, that's fair.
Do you like how just because I didn't know
it
the
was
dance,
a really good deflection?
It was. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, yeah. The thing about these dances is they had little to almost no connection to dances in the United States. Instead, this is fascinating. I would want to learn one of these. They represented the Stilyagi's opinion of how they thought Americans might be dancing to these things.
So it was just kind of like they were just using their imagination?
Yeah, to like blindly impersonate or do an impression of their idea of American dancers.
Interesting.
And there are a couple layers there, you know?
No, it really is. I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around it. So it's like they were fascinated by American culture. You know, I can think of a good example of what it is. There's this rapper named Young Lean. I think we've talked about Young Lean before. And I believe he's Swedish. And he kind of approximates like, you know, Southern trap hip-hop music, but like his lyrics are something lost in translation. Like he's a really interesting rapper, but there's something about like while trying to approximate this thing but not really speaking the language, what comes out the other side is somewhat evocative of the thing, but it's also like its own thing and really kind of strange and interesting, and I really like that.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, I love that this conversation did range into a mention of Young Lean.
Oh, well, yeah, Ben, this is, you know, that's what we do on Ridiculous History. We just kind of go where the ridiculous rabbit may lead. And today it led to Young Lean, and I'm going to quote you just a line. Just he says what I'm talking about.
Oh, please
he
do.
He says, I got an empire of emotional. Squad see me cruising in my go-kart. I'm War, ho. I'm Warhol. I'm Wario when I'm in Mario Kart.
Okay, there's a rhyme scheme there.
He's great. Check him out.
Cadence, yeah. Okay, check it out. Let us know what you think. And Young Lean, if you're enjoying the show, let us know.
Yeah, he's really into Arizona iced tea. That's another thing about Young Lean. But just to wrap this up, there's a really cool connection too between these bootleg Bone records and something that was really popular in the 60s and 70s, which was cereal box records. So like, you know, Life cereal or Wheaties or Honeycomb or Fruit Loops or whatever would have in the box a 45 RPM record that you cut out literally with scissors, and it's on cardboard. So it just goes to show, like, the material determines probably the fidelity and, like, the longevity, the life of the, you know, the record.
Sure.
But you could do it on cardboard, you know? It's just really interesting. I would never have thought that that was the case, and this has opened my eyes to all sorts of weird things. Maybe you could do it on you know, wood. You could probably make a wood record. You can, yeah. I'm sure you could.
Quite possibly, yeah. And again, as you said, it will have inevitable effects on the quality.
Well, it's interesting too, when you listen to a record, if you turn your receiver off, your amplifier, and you just stick your ear down, you can actually hear the sound of it just through the needle. So it's literally like the music is encoded into these grooves, and you can faintly hear it just by listening to the turntable cartridge. So that's fascinating in and of itself.
And there's this other, you know, we're seeing this other world that exists, again, relatively independent of the authorities. There were systems of their own slang, of course. A chuvak, by the way, as a male Stilyagi, a chuvika is a female Stilyagi. I found the list of the terminology. So I know we're still in Russia several decades ago because we haven't traveled back to the present yet.
Oh, we got to get better at that. One day we're going to get left behind.
I propose we travel back to the safety of the studio. All right, we're back. And luckily it looks like I am no longer a little boy, but I've learned a valuable lesson about the history of music.
Yeah.
We know now that we have the benefit of looking back from the present day, 2017, as we record this, we know that the authorities were intensely aware of the Stilyagi, going so far as to send informants, snitches, rats to the bootleggers to pose as record buyers. But we know by the 1960s, restrictions began to loosen. This was after the death of Stalin and the advent of other recording devices like reel-to-reel tape recorders began to make bone records less crucial to this cultural war waged through music.
Well, totally. But like, you know, cassettes, remember when you went, like, speaking of, you know, Casey's Fire mixtape that's still banging in my ears right now. I sound a little distracted. That's why. It's just, God, that beat, Casey. I don't even know what that is. But yeah, like, you know, when I was a kid, I would actually, please don't come after me, FCC or whatever. But I used to exchange Smashing Pumpkins bootleg cassettes with people through the mail.
Through
the mail. It was a whole thing. You'd meet people on message boards and then you would like, you would say, I've got this one, you know, okay, I've got this one. And then you'd exchange and there'd be no money would change hands. It was literally this like internet, marketplace, you know, that was all based on like, I've got something you want. You've got something I want. It's on this disposable medium that everyone can get. There became like standards. You had to have the Maxell cassettes. I can't remember what the exact number was. It was very specific. And they always, I found about this thing called filler, where like whenever there was room at the end of the cassette, they would just fill it with whatever like cool, you know, Fire mixtape they had and what they wanted you to hear. So I actually learned about a bunch of cool new music through the filler on my Smashing Pumpkins bootlegs.
And
that's a little something about me.
That's pretty cool. That's a neat fact. I didn't know that before. I do want to say that despite the tactics of the Soviet government at the time and despite the repression involved in the country at the time, the Stilyagi, I would argue, succeeded. And now you can find these records, these bone recordings in museums. As you said, you can find them in private exhibits. You can even, if the spirit so moves you, participate in this historic movement by going online and buying one on your own. But as you said, it's somewhat strange that these things were built to be affordable and accessible.
Yeah, and I actually was just digging around on eBay, and there's quite a few for sale here, and they look so cool, Ben. One of them is a Beach Boys I Get Around X-ray Roentgen film bones record, rare, $600 or best offer. And then we have one that's just instrumental jazz piece, X-ray Roentgen film bones record, $229. And this one looks so cool. It's like just a, you know, it's like with a cigarette burn in the middle, and it's cut out. It's sort of irregularly shaped because, you know, these were page shaped and they had to be cut out into discs, you know,
by hand.
But it's like just a close up on someone's like sternum, like ribs on the side. It looks like a, like something from like the Nine Inch Nails album art or something like that. But there are quite a few of these on eBay and they are not that crazy expensive. There's $65 for this one. It's a USSR one side X-ray record from 50s Bill Haley and the Saddlemen, Icy Heart, 78 RPM. It's interesting too, because I wonder if they're all 78s.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a T-Rex one, Mark Bolan T-Rex for $800. So not cheap, but and available.
Yes, available, and do exercise caution when you buy, well, when you buy anything online, but when you buy these online, because some of the bone records were undercover bait and switches created by the authorities. So you don't want to get your Saddlemen record that you paid a hefty amount for, and then hear the first few bars of music, and then hear a very angry and stern Russian voice giving you government warnings from the 1950s.
He would sneak a lecture into you? Yes. Oh, that is cold-blooded.
I know. It's so square.
I know.
But if you have experience with this piece of musical history, we would love to hear from you. You can find us all over the internet, wherever you find your favorite podcast. And you can email us directly.
Right. We are ridiculous@howstuffworks.com. And we're all over the usual social media channels and whatnot. But we really just hope you join us again for the next episode.
And what more appropriate way to end this exploration today than with a little outro music?
A little bone music? Drop it, Casey. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.